Okay, I wanted to start out by just asking when and where you were born.
Okay, I was born in Childress, or some people say Childress, Texas. The date, December
8th, 1924. Mm-hmm. So, had your family been in Texas for many years?
Yes, my dad was born in Texas. Uh-huh. And he was born in Hopkins County and moved to Childress for his health, mm-hmm. result of World War I. So I grew up kind of knowing the aftermath of war, and which leads me into this because I was kind of patriotic.
Okay.
So.
Did you know either of your grandparents?
Yes. I knew my grandfather on my mother's side and my great-grandmother and my dad's parents.
Uh-huh.
So.
Can you tell me a little bit about each of them? Or?
On my dad's side, my great-grandparents came from Bohemia into Bohemia.
Bohemia.
Bohemia. Uh-huh. Czech or German. And they came to the United States, to the South, Mississippi, and then migrated to Texas by covered wagon, believe it or not. And my great-grandfather, I don't know where they were born, and I don't know anything about my mother's father other than the fact that he lived in Texas. And my great-grandmother, who was my mother's mother, was of Cherokee Indian blood. So, and she lived to be 103. I remember her very well. And aside from that, that's about all I can tell you about background,
uh-huh.
except that all my relatives lived to be a very, very old age.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What kind of, what was your father's family?
My dad?
Uh-huh.
Loveless, L-O-V-E-L-E-S-S.
Uh-huh.
And
do you know what they worked at? Or
farmers.
Farmers?
Mm-hmm. I guess that's, my grandfather was a preacher. My grandmother, housewife, you know, but they had an awful struggle, I understand. They came from Mississippi down into Texas in the 1860, something like that, 1870. And on my mother's side were more artists, singers, opera singers, musicians. My grandfather was a teacher, and my grandmother, I don't know, she died before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And my one aunt, my mother's sister, is a teacher at the Texas State College.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, she had only one sister, my mother, or they're both living.
Uh-huh.
But that's it. You know, my dad's people were farmers, and my mother's people were educated, but by circumstances had to become farmers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it.
What were your mother's maiden names?
Mathis.
Mathis?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they, like you're saying, they had education, but that worked basically the farming?
Well, in the years that I remember, of course, were Depression years, and I don't know what they did prior to, say, the 20s, prior to the 30s, but from the 30s on, they seem to be farmers. That's about it, you know.
Did your parents ever tell you how they met?
Yeah. My dad had come back from the war, and I think my mother was 15 or 16, and they met at some country dance, or this would be like 1922. No, it couldn't be 1920, 21. And I guess they had a forced wedding because my older sister was on her way when they got married. So I guess things, you know, heroes, boys coming back in uniform. It was almost like a repeat of the Second World War, except during the First World War, if a girl flew it around or didn't come home on time, the guy had to marry her.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So that was that. Actually, that's how they met at a church dance, as I recall. Them, you know, from what they said. At any rate, they got married.
Uh-huh.
So.
So was your mother? Was she in high school, and did she got it from education?
She was still in school, mm-hmm. but she quit school. I think she was 16 when she got married.
Mm-hmm. Had he had any kind of education at all?
My dad, not really. Farmer. Mm-hmm. Not too much.
Well, he fought during World War I.
Yeah, he was in the World War I. Mm-hmm.
Did he ever, it
sounds
like he had fought
in some other. Oh, yes, uh-huh. Well, he had a sweetheart in France, and he wrote to her for many years after that, and I have all their letters, and I have their pictures. Mm-hmm. And that was a bone of contention, because they kept writing to each other, even up to about 1926. Uh-huh. And when he came back, he was a wreck. Totally shattered by 30s, mm-hmm. physically, mentally. Mm-hmm. He was injured, gassed, lungs, mm-hmm. and shell shock. And he got along fine until mid-30s. And then any noise or any aggravation or anything could set him off. Mm-hmm. And he'd go into hospitals. Mm-hmm. And then to this little town, Childress, where he went. For his health. That's where they sent him after the war. Mm-hmm. Or they recommended that he move there for the dry air. Also had lots and lots and lots of those, to me they were old soldiers, but actually they were young men mm-hmm. in the times that I remember when I lived there, and they would send them out there to for the air. Mm-hmm. And so some of my earliest memories are those vets. You know, from the World War I, without faces, arms, legs, ears, no noses, really it was awful. But I remembered all of that. I grew up with that in the back of my mind. This is why I came out here and I was really, helped win the war. Mm-hmm. So that was, I think, since we're on this is the theme or what we're discussing. But my dad did have several bad times. And then somewhere in the 40s, he suddenly just learned how to live with himself and get along and peaceful life, and he lived to be in his 70s.
Mm-hmm. These men that you see, say the best, and your mm-hmm. father.
See, to me, they were old, but they really were not old. Uh-huh. They were. It was only because I was small.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so they probably would have been men in their
20s and 30s.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Did they seem at all bitter about the war? Or bitter about
I don't know. Actually, my dad would. Well, we were taught always to. We lived in a little town not too far from a veterans hospital in Amarillo, 50, 60 miles from the hospital. But they'd have summer leaves, or they'd come down in and around Childress because of the air, and there plus the lakes there. And my dad actually would teach us to stay away from the girls. Run, run, run. You know, I mean, it was an obsession with him. He had myself and my older sister, and we were 8, 10, 12 then, but my dad would always tell us, keep away from them, run, don't go near them. It was some sort of an obsession with him or a fear. So,
did he ever say why?
Well, in later years, many, many years later, he would tell me that he saw things in, soldiers raping the girls in Europe, and actually in France and Germany, I guess the soldiers went crazy over there with the young girls. Mm-hmm. So this was his, whether it was an obsession or truth, I don't know, but I asked him once, some 10, 20 years ago, why? And because to me that was always created a fear in me, but he said it was just that they go crazy and they, they don't know what they're doing. As far as those men were concerned, most of them that I saw there ambled and were disconnected. It seems to me that they simply were like vegetables. They really stalked around. They shuffled. But my Uncle Jim came back without a leg, and he resumed active farming, and he got along fine. I think what we got in Childress were the shell shock and the gas and the nerves, people suffering from nerves. Yeah, I can go back to Childress right now, and in 2 days, I took my grandson back there, and he was almost in the hospital daily for adrenaline. He was a real asthmatic. Mm-hmm. And I had him in Oklahoma City And we thought he was going to die. And the doctor said, well, you know, there's, we just, we, and I took him to Churis, and 2 days later he was completely well and running around and sleeping and stopped. So that's the kind of weather it is down there. So I think what we got down there were the real misfits, those that, and like in my dad's case with his shell shock, it damaged his nerves, because later years he had attacks of Bell's palsy, you know, but it would come and go. Like I said, you know, a loud noise, a gun. One time he had to go out and shoot all of our dogs. They got into a mad dog pack, and they killed some of our calves. My dad had to go out and kill, I think we had 7 or 8 dogs. And he came back, and he went into a rage, and we had to tie him down and go get the sheriff to come and get him. But the next day he was perfectly harmless, you see. So a lot of those men were like that. They'd come down and sleep on the riverbanks or the lake banks, and they'd just shuffle around. So I kept away from them. And then we'd see them in town at the on the streets, you know, sitting around in the alleys. And this, it was a very small town. So I would say the men were disconnected, disoriented. They were not. If I would see these same men today, I would say that they're mentally sick, that they've lost their bearings. But some of them were terribly disfigured. Mm-hmm. And of course that, you turn away from that anyway, so.
And you mentioned your parents were married in about 1920 or
Let's see, I was born in 24, my brother was born in 23, and my sister was born in 22. So they must have gotten married in 21 or early 22, because she was born 6 months or so after they were married, you know. In other words, she told me herself that they got, you know, young girl, and my grandfather apparently went to the Loveless Farm and said, okay, I mean, we're going to have a wedding. That was it, a shotgun wedding. I have some pictures that I would dearly love to show you, but I don't know if you have time. But there are just a few that might give you an idea of what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Well, we can do that later or whenever.
So. Now, so you have an older sister.
There were 11 children.
Yeah,
one right after another.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The last one, I believe, was born in probably 36, 35 or 36. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So. But one right after another.
Okay, so you have that. An older sister, and then
a brother,
and then
and then myself, and then there's that's three, and then there's 4 boys after that.
Uh-huh.
That's 7, right?
Uh-huh.
And then there was a girl that was, oh, no, wait a minute, I'm mistaken. Let me start with the youngest, because that's the only way I can remember.
Okay.
The youngest is Margaret Nail.
Uh-huh.
The next one is would be Robert Donald. He was killed during the war. He was electrocuted on the school ground during a storm. He picked up a live wire when he was 10. And then there's Joan Elizabeth. And then John. And then Thomas. Thomas died 2 years ago, lung cancer. And after Thomas, that's 5. Thomas is Raymond, David, Leroy, Juanita, Ben, and Viola. Is that 11? That's the only way I can remember them. Because I left home when I was 13. That was it. I mean, I left home. I went back a few times, but my mother took us to Oklahoma City, and I went back and forth a few times. And I think I was 15, I went to work at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, at the base. And I came to California when I was just not quite 16.
So. Now, what did your father work
in? My dad was a farmer.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Now, prior to that, however, he was not always a farmer. When he came back from the service, he went to work for the railroad shops, Fort Worth and Denver railroad shops, which were located in Childress, the big repair shops.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Depression, he was one of the very last to be laid off. So from a railroad shop man working in the machine shops, he went to digging trenches and planting trees, and then farm scab labor, and then picking cotton, you know, I mean, things like that.
Did did whatever it could.
Used to hire us out 50 cents a day. Pick up six or seven of his kids and take us out to the cotton patch. And he'd get maybe 50 cents a dollar a day. Mm-hmm. Those are some of my early memories.
So you did that kind of work?
Oh, God, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, was there a... because your mother, I know she had quite a handful.
Well, she was always pregnant and always with a headache and always with a baby. One in the arm and one in the belly. Mm-hmm, really. But, you know, women in those days, in all fairness, there was no birth control. And even if there had been, in a small farming community like that, in the heart of the Depression, and ignorant women, not ignorant. My mother is certainly not ignorant. She's a very well-educated woman. And to this day, I think she's 76, she has never stopped educating herself. And her children, too, are all self-educated. My aunt, her sister, was sent to college from my grandmother's Indian pension. They took the pension and they sent my Aunt Ruth through school and on into college. She became a teacher of English literature, but from my great-grandmother's Indian pension. And my mother always resented that and hated it. But you had two children, and one was pregnant and not married or getting married or had gotten married with already... And the other one was a 14-year-old girl, and so they decided to educate the 14-year-old. And so my Aunt Ruth, to this very day, is a very, very intelligent, retired English literature teacher from Denton State College. Mm-hmm. So at home, we got our education at home on a kitchen table with an oil cloth and a kerosene lamp.
What was that house?
Farmhouse, shack. Want to see a picture? Can we turn it off for a moment?
Okay. I'll leave the uniform so that anyone reading this is not. Mm-hmm. From the picture you're showing me, it's pretty much a wooden little farmhouse.
A wooden farmhouse, no screens. Oh, well, we had a screen. My mother insisted upon screens, but toward the end we didn't. But we gradually moved to better and better houses. Mm-hmm. So when my dad bought the house by the lake, that was an improvement over anything we'd ever lived in. But we basically lived in ramshackle farm frame wooden houses, no wood floors, homemade furniture, although we had a few pieces that today are collector's items. Mm-hmm. So the brothers or sisters have taken them. We had four or five pieces of furniture. There's a brass bed that is worth like $1,000 today out in Santa Ana that my brother took. And my mother had armoires from Germany. And my dad had a trunk of laces and marbles and things from Dresden, China, from my great-grandparents. Mm-hmm. And we had a sideboard and a dresser that was, oh, God, it must have been 200 years old, and it's still, today it's priceless. Mm-hmm. But these are just a few things that we had, and wherever we went, we took them, even though we, they didn't even have glass in the windows sometimes where we lived. Mm-hmm. When my dad was with the railroad shops, we lived in a doctor's home, which was beautiful, two-bedroom, two-story, up and down, two bedrooms up, two down. That was nice, but during the Depression, I think he paid $2 a month rent. You couldn't even afford that. Uh-huh. So.
Not with the you were saying did it seem to you that you moved often with him?
No. I was born about 14 miles out in the middle of nowhere within a shack. My mother said there was snow up to the windows and even the the wolves, they had actually coyotes and wolves there. It was so cold, the wolves came up to the window. And that was the first place that they lived when they first came to Childress. My father was a dirt farmer. He hired out to, he got the shack in exchange for working the land. This must have been about 24, because I was born at the end of 24. And just after that, he finally got his job in the railroad. That's why he went there. And then we moved to a better place, closer into town. Mm-hmm. And I guess about the first 6 years or 8 years of my life, we lived in a rather nice home.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe it to me in terms of
the house? Oh, God, yes, because I went back to find, and all I found was the foundation. could I describe it? How would I do it? Made of wood with cement, but it was in a southern style with a portico and bedrooms on one side, dining room on the other. And my father had a long, block-long column, a sidewalk leading to the dirt road. And he had a planted with flowers on both sides. And we had a croquet. You probably don't know what croquet is. Croquet on one side, and we had tennis on the other side. Croquet is the little ball, the mallets. Yeah, that was it. Now, this is the doctor's home we lived in. I think my dad paid $2 a month rent in exchange for keeping up and giving the doctor the vegetables from our gardens. And we had grapes. That's how I got hooked on smoking, smoking grapevines. But I'm facing you. It was two-story. The kitchen in the back, which was the main room, the kitchen was as big as this whole apartment. And that's where we ate, lived, and breathed, and slept, and almost everything during the winter. Upstairs were one tremendous long room, as large as this apartment, and with sides. Attics on each side, which we used to go into because it was dark. And the things we found in those attics that we destroyed or kids tore up and played with would be worth fortunes today. Old letters, and I mean, maybe there for 100 years. The dust was that thick on them. But we kids slept upstairs in the summer, and in the winter we slept in the kitchen. But the kitchen, as I said, was as big as this apartment. It had a wood stove. Living room was never used except for company. And we had very little in there except a grandfather clock and those, I don't know, just maybe a couple of chairs where there was really no furniture. But my mother slept in that room if I were facing you, I guess she would have been sleeping on the south side. And that's where the children were born. And once a year, we went to the barns. And we stayed until my dad came and called us and said we could come back. And every year it was the same thing, a baby and screaming, and you know. Mm-hmm. But the house itself was nice. It had sliding French doors. During the war, they bought the house only for the doors, the windows, the woodwork. It had no plumbing inside. But the wood, they bought the house for the wood, and they took up the floors piece by piece because it was all done by... No nails, all done by hand. And the sliding doors to all the rooms downstairs, and the frame, the windows, the glass, it had some kind of a stained glass or lead glass. Uh-huh. It was beautiful. It was owned by an old doctor, Smotherman. Mm-hmm. And which is another interesting thing about Childress. When I was a child, it was totally almost all German and Czech. We had Smotherman and Schmidt and Schultz. And Jernigan, and I don't know how we got in there. Arns, Kitchen, Kuchen, almost totally all German, Czech, Polish, Hungarian, Austrian backgrounds of farmers, people. And, it's, you know, just, that's the way I grew up with all these different people, and everybody knew everybody, and... as poor as we weren't the only ones. Everybody else was poor. The only person that had money was the man who owned the ice plant. But I guess in 37, my dad got some money from the government. Another interesting thing is, too, that he went to Washington on that march on the march for the veterans to get their bonus when Hoover had the troops fire the shot. And he was in that tent city there, and he said with the mud and the dirt and the flies and the disease, and he never forgave Hoover. In fact, I don't think he ever cared about this country anymore after that, except during the Second War. He didn't want his sons to go, and there was nothing he could do, but I wanted to go in the service. He wouldn't sign for me, so...
Now, in these growing up here, was the same. That sounds like this doctor's house was closer to town.
It was, it was about 3 miles. We walked to school 3 miles each way. Unless we hitched a ride on the wagons, and we had cotton wagons going in. Mm-hmm. I've actually, in my lifetime, also seen what they call the roundups, cattle roundups. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 50 years ago, but I can still remember the cattle roundups. Those days will never come again. Mm-hmm. But we had cattle roundups and cotton wagons. Mm-hmm. And if we were really lucky, we'd hop on the back of a cotton wagon to go to school, but we walked school, and we walked back, and we walked home to eat our lunch or dinner, we called it then, and we walked back to school again. So we walked a good, and then after that we worked. We went to the fields and worked, and we went out and brought the cows in. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, with your school there, was did it have different grades?
Well, there were two schools here. One was the Robert E. Lee, which I went to, and I thought it was the biggest school I'd ever, I mean, in my memory. See, I left, and I didn't go back for about a good 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. But to me, it seemed that that was the biggest school in the whole world. Actually, when I went back to see it in 1960, uh-huh. I left in 1937, I think. It was actually just a little three-room red brick schoolhouse, and the playground was so small, but to me it seemed that it... And in that little school, Robert E. Lee, I think the grades were from 1 to 7, because there were three or four of us in the same grade, even though one was advanced. I was in the same... I had two little brothers in the same grade, or in the same room, but we'd take turns. We'd go to the study hall while the next little section came in to learn. Then from the study hall, we'd go on to another room while the next little section. And the second school was, I don't remember, one or two of my brothers went 1 year in high school at Wilson High. And that was on the other side of town. And to me, that was like going from here to Long Beach, walking, you know.
Yeah.
So the little school that I went to, however, was... I think I finished fourth grade in that school, but I do know that we all went, and we were all in, there were six or seven of us in the same school all the time, even though